Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
All right, Mason and Ireland show. I'm John Ireland. Ramona Shelburne is in for Mace. Last show of another week. We're taking your phone calls all day, 877-710-ESPN. Here's James in Hollywood. Hey, James, you're on 710-ESPN.
How are you doing? Can y'all hear me?
James, we can hear you, man. How are you?
Awesome. I want to say, first off, Mr. John, congratulations on your graduation for your son.
Oh, thank you, man.
Yeah.
Miss Ramona, I want to say irony hit me because I mess around and remember hearing you always lose those fast track questions, and now you're making yours. And yeah. I lost every single one that you mess around and put out.
Yeah, well, mine aren't necessarily like a test of any kind of intelligence. They're just straight guess, you know, just guess in the dark. Just take a guess, A, B, or C.
And the punches. Don't worry, Lindsay ain't really beating you. She's really good, though.
Thank you, James. It says here you have a baseball question. Yeah.
Yeah, baseball question was, okay, if you want to make a certain amount of money and a person that mess around and owns the business say, okay, I can give you that money for 8 hours of work or I can give you that money for 4 hours of work. Why wouldn't you just take the money? Second part of the question is, why can't they just mess around and just take the full price money for the 48 games in the year, give the owners enough time to mess around and see what's going on with this whole COVID? Other than that, if they go and play the whole, like, 72 or they're asking for 100 games or so, that's going to push all the way into, like, some, like, time next year. They ain't even going to have time to do the research on what might be able to happen next year. These are billionaires that have plenty of resources, plenty of assets to actually go out there and try to see what's going on around the world, but you're giving them less time when they have to conduct business whenever it comes to when pennies on a dollar.
James, those are all good questions. By the way, I think, Ramona, that's where they're going to end up. I think they're going to end up at 48 games with a full pro.
Oh, wow.
Exactly where James says they're going to end up, because I think the players are going to say no, and then the owners are going to mandate that they have the right to do that, and that's exactly where we're going to end up, James. So
and
what you're arguing,
nothing.
Yeah, what you're arguing for is going to happen.
And they're complaining about probably messing around and contracting the coronavirus or whatnot. Well, if there's a ball that's hit into right field, is the left field going to mess around and have to go through that? No. If the catcher is throwing the ball to the pitcher, those are the only contact. Even the batter's not hitting, not touching the ball. If the batter touched the ball, that's an automatic out.
Right, so it's going to be weird. There's going to be different. And thank you, James, for the phone call. It's going to be weird, Ramona, whatever happens. I mean, I've been watching those Korean games, and it still looks like baseball. I mean,
yeah.
It still looks like what they're doing. But there's going to be little things that are going to be different. By the way, James mentioned my son Jack graduated from high school yesterday.
That's so awesome.
And he goes to a high school in Manhattan Beach, MiraCosta. And I wanted to give a shout-out to the administrators and the superintendent, Mike Matthews, and the principal, Ben Dale. They were put in an impossible situation, Ramona. They tried really hard to do an in-person graduation. That's what the kids really wanted. And they were told by the county, no. They kept going back and revising their proposal. They were going to do all these different things. And the county just kept saying, no, no, no. So they somehow set up, it was in essence, you drive by. The kids would get out of the car, they would go through a gauntlet, and all the teachers and administrators were cheering for them. They would go up, they would get their diploma from the principal. They had pomp and circumstance blaring from speakers.
Okay.
They had balloons. The whole process, I thought we were prepared to spend 2 or 3 hours there. They were so efficient that everybody got in at their allotted time. It wasn't what anybody wanted. But those guys, those people like Mike and Ben and all the teachers, got there at 9 in the morning and were there till 6:30 at night. And they handled 600 kids.
Wow.
And then after that, all the kids went down to the beach and they walked from the Hermosa Pier, most of them with masks. It was such a weird thing to see. From the Hermosa Pier down the Manhattan Beach Pier with all the people who lived on the Strand cheering for them.
Wow.
And it was one of the coolest things. I think they started something that's going to continue long after COVID and long after this happens, because the community was so cool. And it was just thank you to everybody who did that, because I think it meant a lot to the high school and to the kids and everybody. And it worked out really well. But it was weird seeing large groups. It was almost like the protests we've been seeing around town where people were walking down the street with masks. Mm-hmm. You know, they were kind of next to each other, but they were just marching. And it was they marched like the 2 miles from one pier to the other pier and stopped at the other end and took pictures and celebrated. And they were getting cheered the whole way. So it was really cool.
That's awesome.
Okay. So, Ramona, I mentioned that 18 years ago today, June 12th, 2002, the Lakers won their third consecutive NBA title, sweeping the Nets in New Jersey. It would then take 7 years before winning another one when Kobe and Powell led him to back-to-back titles in 9 and 10. So I have a game about the 2002 Lakers.
Okay.
I have different games in Fast Track, so I want to get this in now. So, Lindsay, you can play. Funch, you can play. And Ramona, you can play. Let's see who remembers the most about the three-peat.
We all know I'm a big Lakers expert. Can't wait to see how big
I may not
this.
Be the greatest at this, because this is 2002. Funches
will
I
win.
Wasn't around yet.
I think Funchess will win, but we'll see. Well, you were at Stanford when this was going on, right?
Yeah, I think 2002.
Or as I would
graduated.
Say, you were at Cal.
I was at Cal, yeah.
Okay.
It was my first year out of college, so I was paying attention, but I wasn't covering it yet.
All right, here's the first question. The Lakers were 7-0 in the playoffs before they ran into Sacramento in the Western Conference Finals. The Kings took the Lakers to 7 games. Then L.A. swept the Nets. So they finished 15-3 in those playoffs. Lindsay, is that true or false?
I'm going to say true.
Fudge.
True.
Ramona.
No, I think that's false. I think they were 15-1.
It's false, but they were not 15-1. Ramona gets the point. They lost to San Antonio in the second round, four games to one, so they finished 15-4, and Ramona is on the board. Okay.
All right.
Among the veterans on that 2002 team were Brian Shaw, Mitch Richmond, Lindsey Hunter, Samaki Walker, and Jelani McCoy. Funch, true or false?
True.
Ramona, true or false?
I think all of those guys were Lakers. I'm trying to decide if they were all on that team. I'm going to say false.
Lindsay?
I'm going to say true.
It is true, and that ties the game at one.
Wow.
All of those guys were on the 2002 Lakers. Okay. In the finals, Shaq led the Lakers in scoring, averaging 36 points a game.
Back that up. Shaq led the Lakers in scoring, and then?
Then Kobe was second.
Okay.
Only one other Laker player averaged double figures in the finals. Robert Horry, who averaged 11 points a game. Momo, true or false?
I'm going to say that's false.
Okay, Lindsay.
I'm going to go true.
Funch, break the tie.
False.
It is false. The only other Laker to average double figures.
Rick
you guys
Fox?
Want to guess? Nope.
Rick Fox?
Nope.
Derek Fisher?
Yep, Derek Fisher. 12 points a game. All right, two more.
Okay.
The Nets team that the Lakers played in the finals was coached by Byron Scott. It featured current Lakers assistant Jason Kidd, current ESPN personality Richard Jefferson, Jason Collins, the first openly gay NBA player, and current Celtics analyst Brian Scalabrine. Kidd, Jefferson, Collins, and Scalabrine all in the Nets that year, coached by Byron Scott. Lindsay, true or false?
I'm going to stick with my previous answers and say true.
Okay, Funch.
True.
Ramona.
I think that's false. I don't remember Jason Collins on that team.
It's 100% true. Jason Collins was
really?
A starter on that team, your college dorm mate at Stanford.
Gosh, that's so bad that I got that wrong. I just remember, I thought it was a trick question because he played for the Nets later.
Okay.
That's when he came back. Oh, okay.
Here's the last
question. I'm overthinking.
For all the marbles. It's Funch 3, Lindsay 2, Ramona 2.
All right.
Funch, you have to go first. Game four, the finals game that happened exactly 18 years ago, was the last game that legendary Laker announcer Chick Hearn ever broadcast for the team. Hearn later emceed the Lakers parade, or parade, as Mason would say, 2 weeks later. So Chick's last game was the Lakers winning the NBA title. Funch, true or false?
I think that's false.
Okay, Ramona.
I think that's true. Because I'm just going for the win.
All right, Lindsay.
I'm going to stick with my guns again and say true.
You're glad you did. Funch, you did it again. You blew it. Chick's last game was in the finals that year. He tragically suffered his fall and passed away in August of 2002.
Wow.
But somehow, now looking back, now that we're 18 years removed, I think it's kind of cool that Chick's legendary career, the last game he did was a title. The very
That's
last
cool.
game he did.
That's cool.
Yeah, and of course now Chick's statue sits outside Staples Center. And
do you have one for
room,
Lindsay and I to break the tie?
I can, well, it's...
Well, technically I beat you because you said that one was worth...
No, you guys both had two.
No, we
so
were
you,
tied going in.
Oh, okay.
So you did tied. Okay.
I think you actually win though, Linz, because I should have known the Jason Collins thing. I overthought that.
That's true.
Like,
you went to college with Jason Collins.
Went to college with him. And I just thought, I think it's a trick question because he played for the Nets later. So I just thought you were being tricky there.
I'll take the win.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I want to get to this too, because Ramona, your retweet is when I saw it. Okay. Yesterday, Scottie Pippen had this weird tweet where he said it was Throwback Thursday, and yesterday was the anniversary of Michael Jordan's flu game, or as we found it in The Last Dance, the pizza game. He says he ate bad pizza. So Pippen's tweet was three emojis. It was a silly face, a pizza emoji, and a shrug.
Mm-hmm.
Ramona, what does that mean? Was he throwing shade at Jordan? Was he saying it wasn't really the pizza? Was he just bringing it up for fun? Break down the tweet you retweeted. What does Scottie Pippen's tweet mean?
So, first of all, he has a picture of him with his arm around Michael Jordan, and Jordan's like very obviously sick.
Yeah, and it's a Throwback Thursday.
Throwback Thursday. That's a thing on Twitter. And so he said,
which, by the way, I had to tell John that's what it was because he didn't know what TBT meant.
I didn't know. It said hashtag TBT. I said, what is
TBT.
That? Lindsay told me.
Okay. Throwback Thursday. And I think when he said, when the first hashtag is what's the first one?
It's the face. Just like a goofy face. Like, really?
Yeah. Like, really? Pizza? Shrug? So to me, the shade is, really? Pizza? That's what we're going with. Like that, you know, to like Scottie Pippen was not happy with his portrayal in The Last Dance. I don't think he felt like he was given enough credit. I don't think I think he was angry at Jordan for calling him selfish. I think he was angry at Michael for the way he reacted to him sitting out that play, against the Knicks that one time. And, you know, I don't know if the guys on the team knew about the pizza, if they have a different theory. Maybe they have a different idea of what happened. But I thought that was Scottie's way of throwing some shade at that game, because I certainly don't think it was his way of saying, oh, Throwback Thursday wasn't this great.
Lindsay, did you interpret it that way, that Pippen was throwing shade at Jordan?
Yeah, I thought he was kind of just making fun of him. I mean, they're still all right with each other, right?
I think so.
I don't know about that.
Well, even if they're not, I would take the six rings, wouldn't you?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like, if I played with Jordan and he doesn't like me anymore for whatever reason, we didn't get along, but he got me six rings and basically got me into the Hall of Fame and onto the Dream Team, I'll take it.
Yeah.
Who cares if we're friends?
Yeah, but I think that's also, like, I just think Scottie's really hurt. I mean, that was the vibe I got in covering it and talking to other people on that team, you know, as they were coming out. Scottie was going to do some media around The Last Dance, but then when it started airing and he was upset about things, he canceled everything and hasn't really done any interviews. The only guy who really spoke up for Scottie was Dennis Rodman. And he
I thought Steve Kerr did too.
Spoke up, but like as in, like basically saying what Scottie's feeling. I don't know that Steve Kerr talked.
Well, here's the weird thing. And you tell me if you, I mean, you wrote a couple of pretty long pieces on it for ESPN. After that Last Dance was over, I actually thought more of Scottie Pippen. I thought it kind of analyzed what a great player he was and how he was so efficient defensively and how he was underrated, in my opinion. Did you have a different, do you know why he was mad?
I definitely think he was mad that Michael said it was selfish of him not to have gotten the surgery on his foot at the beginning of the season. You know, Scottie Pippen pulled a Shaq before there was a Shaq, right? When Shaq did that?
I got hurt on company time.
I'll heal on company time. So Michael, in the first episode, basically said Scottie was being selfish with that. That, I think, was a shot across the bow. And it was not appreciated. There's also the scene in episode 7 where, this is my opinion, I don't think Scottie did himself any favors by doubling down on why he didn't go back in the game after, you know, when Tony Kukoc makes the last shot. It was a bad, you know, look for him then. It's a bad look for him now. He should have just said that, I got upset and I shouldn't have. You know, all of his teammates backed him up, and then all of a sudden he kind of doubled down on it and said, I guess I'd do the same thing again. And in that discussion, Michael Jordan, who wasn't even on the team that year, he was down playing baseball, says he called Phil Jackson and said, Scottie will never live this down. I'm sure he doesn't appreciate that comment.
Right. But it's true. I mean, you can't tell the story of Scottie Pippen without that story coming up.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, Scottie had a chance to reframe that whole episode, and he didn't in this documentary. So I'm sure he doesn't.
Yeah, he actually doubled down on it.
Yeah, doubled down. And you know, a lot of the players in the team feel like that was really wrong that they didn't give Scottie an extension, that he had been such an important person on the team, that they should have paid him that last year. I mean, everything about, his contract, and he was so underpaid. He was, but they could have done an extension with him. They could have renegotiated. Jerry Krause and Jerry Reinsdorf just didn't want to. They just didn't believe in redoing existing deals. And I think that team was already so expensive. They liked having Pippen at that salary. And they said, well, we told you not to sign this deal. It was going to undervalue you, and it's your fault. It may have been Scottie's fault. Maybe he shouldn't have signed that contract, but he did. And you want to have a happy superstar. You want to make people, you want to reward people for a job well done. And I think a lot of the problems in that Bulls team could have been solved if they would have just done that.
Just would have paid him, yeah.
Yeah, just paid him. Give him a 2-year extension, you know, pay him a little bit extra. You can still trade him if that's what you want. But I think Scottie had been so hurt by the constant trade rumors, by being underpaid. He felt undervalued. And, you know, it just degenerated into an awful relationship.
All right, coming up next, something happened in college football today that I thought was really shady. But no one's talking about it. We'll talk about it coming up next. Ramona in for Mace, I'm John Ireland, ESPN LA. All right, Mason and Ireland show. Ramona in for Mace. Phones are open, 877-710-ESPN. 877-710-3776. Trying to take a lot of calls, especially on Fridays during this pandemic. Which is a major win for me, by the way. Lindsay, before you got here, Mason refused to take calls. And so did Greg. That was part of the
problem. I was
going
to say, I thought that Mason refused to take them because Greg had forbidden him not to.
Well, Greg hated him and Mason hated him, and so I was outvoted every time we wanted to take calls. But then
I came around and changed things.
Exactly.
Right?
You're a welcome addition to the show. All right, so this was kind of, in my opinion, an undercovered story today, and I wanted to see what you guys thought about it. You may have been reading or hearing over the past week or so that the University of Iowa football program has been dodging a lot of arrows because former players, particularly former black players, have come out and said the strength coach there did not treat any of the black players with respect, singled them out. You know, called them slurs. The strength coach has been removed. And Kirk Ferentz, the head coach, has been saying he didn't know anything about it. But other players have been coming out and saying, of course Ferentz knew about it. He was there every day while the strength coach was doing this stuff.
Right.
And so today, Kirk Ferentz held a press conference to kind of face the music about this. you know, because a lot of people are accusing him of lack of control and of, you know, not being in touch with especially the black players in his program. And Ramona, the thing that I was struck by that I thought was just weird was at this press conference, Ferentz brought three current players with him. And I thought, what a ridiculous position to put those players in.
Oh, yeah.
Bomani Jones, who works for ESPN, before this press conference even happened, tweeted, "It's wild inappropriate for Ferentz to drag players out here for whatever this is going to be." And what it turned out to be was them telling their side of the story. But I couldn't understand why he would force players to join him when the questions were all about him and his coaching staff. Here's Kirk Ferentz and part of what he said today.
"I know we have outstanding guys, really good people on our team, but if you do not constantly or consistently look at every aspect, then you don't have, and if you have an environment where players don't feel like they can bring up an issue, that's a problem. I feel like I let those players down by not creating that environment where they did feel comfortable and sharing more about their experiences, bringing that to our attention while they were here. I know our coaches feel the same way, and we're committed to making sure that never happens again."
So the players came out and backed him up, unsurprisingly, and they answered all the questions, and then the four of them went back to the football facility. But Ramona, is it something or nothing that he made three players go with him?
Yeah, this is exactly what we've all been trying to educate ourselves once we've been talking about, the Me Too movement or workplace harassment or whatever it is. When you're in a position of power, people are not necessarily in a position to tell you the truth. They don't feel comfortable because you're in a position of power. So when you're the coach, you have to go out of your way to do that. Now, I don't know if he made those players come with him. I don't know if they volunteered and say, "Coach, I want to come with you." Maybe they did, but you have to have a recognition. I've been trying to be even more aware of that myself in my line of work. I'm older. I have a position of stature at the in this industry, in the company. So if I say something to a younger colleague, like, I have to be careful. Like, are they going to call me out on something? I have to know. Are they just going along with that because they actually want to do it, you have to always be self-aware in ways that you never even thought. And he continues to be really, really not self-aware at all. Like, today he said he had a blind spot, right?
Yeah, which is unusual. He came out of the Bill Belichick, Nick Saban coaching tree. Those guys were all together at the Browns back in the day. And he's had a very successful run at Iowa. But to put players... Okay, so what you're being accused of is not being in touch with your players. Something you admitted today that you're guilty of. So at a press conference where you're being accused of not being in touch with your players, to drag three of your players out there with you and make them take questions about this subject seems weird to me. Now, the other side of that, Momo, is that he could say, "Well, look, it's an empty gesture by me if I don't let you hear from the players. You need to hear directly from these guys and what they think about this situation." And the players were very impressive. But to me, I thought he put them in a position where they couldn't disagree. What are they going to do? Go up there and say, "Now, coach is wrong. It's messed up here." They'd never play again.
Right. people always ask me, John, like, why do you use anonymous sources in stories? Why, I always think it's stronger when you have somebody on the record. So they're putting their name behind and, their quotes, they're putting their name, they're sticking their neck out, they're putting their reputation and their name on it. But there is a reason why you do anonymous quotes, is that sometimes people don't feel comfortable being the whistleblower. And you have to understand, when they're in that position of power, they're in a position of not power. So if you're a player at Iowa and you don't feel necessarily very comfortable around your program, the strength coach, the coach, whatever it is, you're probably going to run to a reporter. You're probably going to run to somebody who's going to grant you anonymity or who's going to grant you a safe space to tell your side of the story, your version of events. Most press conferences, I find them to be somewhat worthless in a lot of ways, because the people there it's just a staged event. It's they're telling
very
you this is
so.
Their messaging. Yeah. This is not necessarily what the truth is. This is just what the messaging that they're either willingly choosing to participate in or feel compelled to participate in.
Hey, before we break here, I want to circle back to something we did last segment. I mentioned that Chick Hearn did his last game 18 years ago today for the Lakers.
Mm-hmm.
The Lakers won a title in New Jersey against the Nets, and Chick tragically passed away that summer. I forget, Ramona, that people that are 20, 21 years old have no recollection of Chick doing a game.
Wow.
Think about it. You could be 19 and never have heard Chick.
Dang.
I do this a few times a year, but on the anniversary of Chick's last game, I want to do it again. I can't encourage this enough if you're 23 or under, because I think that's probably around the age, maybe 24, 25 year olds, where they might have some maybe bleak recollection of Chick. If you have some time in the next couple of weeks, go down the rabbit hole of typing Chick Hearn into a YouTube search window. You will not regret it. He is the greatest basketball announcer who ever lived. Trust me, I know. I grew up listening to Chick. When I do games now, I hear myself saying words and phrases I've never said before, and after the game I will realize it's because they were rattling around somewhere in my brain because I was so addicted to listening to Chick. Bill McDonald, the Lakers TV guy, would tell you exactly the same thing. We have the honor of sitting in Chick's chair. And you know, it's funny, Ramona, I'm the fourth radio announcer removed from Chick. Paul Sunderland, Spiro Dinas, Joel Myers, me, we've all had a chance to do it. But that there is no question and never will be whose chair that is. And I try to never forget that. And I have people come up to me and say, "Why, I hear you do the games." And when I find out they don't know who Chick is, I'm dumbfounded. Because we're all just basically, we've taken his act and run with it. And he was so, I mean, he invented the phrase slam dunk.
Jeez.
When you hear an announcer say dribble drive, put him in the popcorn machine, yo-yoing up and down, all of that came from Chick. And so if you're young, because I know we've got younger people in the audience, and you've never heard Chick Hearn, go into YouTube, type in Chick Hearn into a search window, and there'll be hundreds and hundreds of highlights and hundreds of games that you can hear Chick call a game. And Ramona, the thing he was blessed with, that I have a little bit of this, but nobody ever had it to the degree. The only other person I heard that had it to the degree Chick did was Bob Miller, the Kings Hall of Fame hockey announcer, is that Chick could talk super fast, really fast. He could say anything really, really rapidly, and you could completely understand what he was saying. No matter how fast the game was going, Chick would keep up, and
yeah,
you could not lose your stream of consciousness. He was so good at describing action and using enthusiasm. And, you know, I know I'm not telling you anything you don't know. You got to grow up listening to Chick. But as you can tell, I'm very passionate about this subject because I consider myself somebody who worshipped at the temple of Chick and learned how to do this from him. Without Chick Hearn, there is no Bill McDonald. There is no John Ireland. And Chick did his last game 18 years ago today. And if you've never heard Chick do a game, just trust me. Trust me and do this. Go on YouTube and listen to Chick do a basketball game, and then ask somebody older about Chick, and the stories will just start flowing.
You know, I remember when Vince Scully was retiring, John, and he would say, you know, in a few years, you'll just forget about me and move on to somebody else. And we were like, no way, you're Vince Scully. You're the soundtrack of my childhood. You're the greatest baseball announcer. And I think because Chick retired, not necessarily retired, but called his last game. What was it, 18 years ago, you said?
18 years ago today when the Lakers won the title in New Jersey, yeah.
Yeah, I know what Vin was talking about. It doesn't mean that he wasn't great. It just means that time passes and there's younger people who just didn't know, who just didn't have that experience. And I feel, just blessed that I got to grow up in L.A. with Vin Scully, Chick Hearn, and Bob Miller.
And Dick Enberg doing the Angels.
I tell
people all the time, Ramona, I feel like I grew up going to sportscaster school.
Seriously. Those are the soundtrack of my youth, those guys.
I used to. I tell this story whenever I do like an interview about the Laker job or how I got it. Mm-hmm. I tell people that those young people won't know what I'm talking about, but there used to be a thing called a transistor radio. It was about the size of your cell phone. And you would turn it on and you could listen to AM radio wherever you were. Well, my parents would yell at me and tell me to go to bed. So I would turn my transistor radio on, put it underneath my pillow, and put my head on top of the pillow so I could hear Chick, but my mom and dad couldn't hear Chick through the pillow. So I was the only one here. And I'm convinced that's where I got the ability to do this, is just listening to. It was like he was to Billy and I, and this is Bill and I have had a lot of conversations about this, Bill McDonald. He was our Yoda. He was the guy that basically taught us how to be kind of Jedi Knights and learn how to broadcast NBA games. So it's if you've never heard Chick do a game, do that today. All right, coming up, we're going to try and track Matt Barnes down, and we'll circle back to our top story. We think, either going on right now or starting in a few minutes, the NBA players are having a meeting. Is there trouble in the bubble? I certainly hope not. But we'll update you next. Ramona in for Mace. I'm John Ireland, ESPN LA. Today it's Momo in Ireland. Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. Ramona Shelburne filling in for Mace. And at the top of the show, if you weren't with us, we discussed the fact that it could be going on right now. It could be starting in a few minutes. We're not exactly sure of the time. But there are a group of NBA players on a conference call discussing is the plan to go back to Orlando the smartest thing the players can do? Now, let me preface this by saying, I'm rooting for this Orlando plan. I get to announce the Laker games. I'm a Lakers fan. I think that the Lakers have an excellent chance to win the title. The players I've talked to, and I haven't talked to all of them, but the players I've talked to were very anxious to play. But, Ramona, that doesn't mean that there aren't players with other opinions. As much as I'm rooting for this to happen, how worried should I be that it might not?
Yeah, I think there is a worry where last week there wasn't. So we've gone from everything's great, everybody's happy, we're all moving forward to like, how are we going to do this? To hold on a minute here, what are we doing? Hold on a minute here. What can I have in the bubble? What can I not have? What can I do? What can I not do? Is this really the right thing to be doing with what's going on in our country in terms of the protests against police brutality and the social justice that people have been calling for? Should we be focusing on basketball, and can you make more of a difference, in your community?
Can I ask you about that specifically? Can I ask you about that part of it specifically? So LeBron is as socially active as any player maybe ever. He uses his brand to get his views on social justice and racial inequality, and he's created a school in an impoverished area. I mean, LeBron is active. Couldn't I argue that by playing, by him being on TV every other night, and then doing interviews after, he could advance the cause?
Yeah, and I think that is the conversation that is being had right now. Can you do more? Will you make a bigger statement by playing or using the platform and the spotlight that you'll have in Orlando? Or will you do more by not playing, by saying we don't want to be the entertainment that distracts from the protests and from people who are trying to enact social change, some real change? Like, we don't want to distract from any of that. from the cause. We want to join the cause. So I see both sides. I would always advocate for using your platform, because I think the biggest thing you have in this world right now is the platform. When people are listening to you, like, I always want a seat at the table, you know, like, go back to that line from Hamilton. I want to be in the room where it happens. Okay.
Right.
You want to be in the room where it happens. You want to make, like, you want to be able to say things in and do things that actually change the world. And you have a platform where the world is watching you, down in Orlando. So
in the case of the Lakers, yeah. Ramona, LeBron is the leader. Mm-hmm. The Lakers and Adam, this goes all the way up to the top to Adam Silver. The Lakers, I know this for a fact because I'm around them, are never discouraged from sharing their views on things like racial inequality or social justice. The Lakers welcome their players to help, you know, fight the fight against those things. So I would think, you know, when you're in the spotlight every other night and competing for a championship and your leader is LeBron James, that, and I'm sure that's one of the things that's going to come up on this call tonight is we can advance. What else is coming up on this call tonight, do you think?
I think it's everything from, why don't we get to have our families there? Why are we doing the bubble anyway? How come the media and Disney workers can go home to their families and we can't every night? You know, from that to, are we sure we want to do 22 teams, not just 16? Like, I mean, I think when you open it up to a floor of that many players, there's going to be a lot of people with a lot of opinions, and they're not necessarily coalesced around one grievance. The best way I can put it is that I think there's probably three main issues, and each player who's going to be either on the call or just is listening to the call, probably has an order has a different order of what those three main issues are. The first one, and I'll say this in no particular order, is what is life in the bubble really going to be like? Can we really go 6-7 weeks without seeing our families? And you know, there's not just families, but friends, families, girlfriends, whatever that means to you in your own situation. That's one. Number two is, should we be playing basketball and focusing our attention on that when what's going on in the world is so impactful? And so, you know, this has a chance to be a sort of generational type moment in history to change things politically and socially for Black America or African Americans, whatever whoever you're advocating for, and trying to police reform, all the different things that people are talking about during these during these demonstrations and protests. And should we be focusing on basketball right now? And probably number three is, what is the money involved and what this means for, let's say, free agents, guys eligible for rookie contracts, anybody who is taking a quote unquote risk by going to the financial risk by going into the bubble and playing out the rest of the season, when if they didn't, they would just, you know, be in there and they could be a free agent clean. Right, they wouldn't have to worry about a Boogie Cousins type injury happening while they're down there in Orlando.
I think it'll be interesting, and I think that before we leave the air on this show, we're going to get some information about this call. Do you find it surprising that Kyrie Irving, who has been criticized in the past for being unable to lead a team, is apparently one of the leaders on this call? I've always found Kyrie to be a pretty engaging guy. I've never had an issue with Kyrie, but he is criticized a lot for what happened in Cleveland and what happened in Boston. He's in Brooklyn now. Are you surprised he's one of the leaders on this thing?
Not at all. I find Kyrie to be argumentative for the sake of being argumentative. I think he challenges things. He's questioning a lot of different things. I mean, you know, his whole stance on the Earth being flat. I mean, what was that about? Like,
I think he wasn't saying the Earth. Promote debate.
Exactly. Okay, he's saying you should question what your commonly held teachings are, even though this is. I mean, he didn't say this. He didn't explain himself. I still don't know if he 100% believes this or not. Okay, but he. he just wanted to call into question our educational system that starts with a beginning of the earth is round. He's like, well, how do you know that? Do you only know that because that's what you've been taught? Do you know that the earth is round? Or is the earth flat? Right? I mean, like, he was,
right.
He's like one of those people who just wants to be argumentative and who wants to ask questions. And I personally think that you have to just lean in and embrace that, because if you're talking about 450 guys getting on the same page, making a decision and deciding, yep, this is what we're going to do, you need to give everybody the chance to ask all their questions, to plead their case, to make sure they get every potential issue they might have out in the open, talked about, discussed, and then they decide if it can sit well with them. Good. Bring the issues up. Let's see where players end up after tonight. I firmly believe that we're still going to have the plan moving forward, because as a lot of players are reminding their peers on social media today, agents, et cetera, if they don't finish the season, if the season is canceled, there's a very real possibility that the NBA invokes the force majeure provision, which is basically their right to cancel the contract. They can cancel the CBA, and then they have an incredible amount of leverage over the players going into starting a new CBA, because you'd be negotiating in the middle of a pandemic when you're talking about next season with no fans. So 40% of your revenue is gone. You don't want to give up that ground. You don't want to force the NBA into that. Now, I don't think the NBA would do it. I would call that bluff if that's what you're really worried about. But do you really want to try? Because that could have some pretty big consequences.
Right. And so we'll see what comes out of this call tonight. And we'll see if details are going to leak out. They always do. You're one of many really good NBA reporters, and we're going to get, we're tying you up today by doing this show, but there'll be other guys. There'll be
okay. Adrian Wojnarowski on the other one.
There you go. Perfect.
Yeah.
All right. Coming up next, we'll take your phone calls. We always say we're going to take calls on Friday. We'll open the phones 877-710-ESPN, 877-710-3776, about anything that you guys want to talk about on this Friday. Also, the latest on baseball, there has been another proposal just presented this afternoon. Does it get us baseball back? Ooh. We'll kick that around. Ramona Shelburne in for Mace. I'm John Ireland, 710 ESPN. All right, Mason and Ireland show. Ramona is in for Mace. We're going to track down Matt Barnes, the former Laker, former Clipper. Boy, he's got a great podcast. Do you listen to the All the
Smoke
podcast with Matt Barnes and Steven Jackson?
Yeah,
we got Fast Track coming up for you today at 5:30, and then Sleewell will get in here around 6 o'clock. So a lot still to come. There was another offer from the owners today to try and convince the players to sign an agreement and come in and play baseball. Ramona, it's weird. We're sitting here on June 12th on a Friday. Buster Olney and others have said this needs to be done by June 15th. Ooh. June 15th is Monday. The owners made a proposal today, and I don't think the players are going to take it. They proposed 72 games. Trevor Bauer immediately came out and said, this proposal is exactly the same as the other ones. It's not enough money. I think the players are going to reject it. And I fear where this is heading is that on Sunday night, or maybe Monday, the owners are just going to jam an agreement down their throats. Mm. What do you think?
Mm. Well, that's the owner's leverage, and Rob Manfred seems like the kind of guy to do it. I still think there's three negotiating days. I still think the players can come back and meet in the middle. I'm hoping that, at least. I hope that they play more than 48 games. I mean, what were the Nationals after 48 games last year?
Well, after 50 games, they were 19-31.
Yeah.
They wouldn't even have made the playoffs.
Yeah, and they were the best team at the end of the year. I mean, it's a farce of a season if you try that. But the owner's argument is pretty simple. The owner's argument is basically, we lose money just by opening the doors. So, you know, it's like running a movie theater and you have four fans in the stands. And you know that it costs you, that doesn't even pay one employee's salary to open up the ballpark that day or to open up the movie theater. That's what they're saying. We lose money just by playing these games because we have to pay these players' salaries and we have no revenue coming in except for some of the local TV revenue, and that's it. We don't have fan revenue. We don't have gate. We lose our sponsorship revenue. I get it. I'm sympathetic. But the players' rationale, to me, is pretty clear. you guys have been making record profits the last few years. And so now that we're in a downturn, we're all going to share in it, and we should all share in it equally. And that's why we should have full pro. We should just do prorated. That's why do we have to take an extra haircut on top of that, just as a little give back to the owners?
I get that. But part of me, Ramona, is saying, okay, they're offering 72 games.
Yeah.
And they're offering 70% of the prorated salary. I know the
80,
players
yeah,
are
yeah.
yeah, the players are insisting on 100.
Mm-hmm.
All right. It seems like 72 games would be better. Now, Trevor Bauer points out that the money would work out almost the same. That if they got 100% at 48 and 70 or 80% at 72, they would make almost the exact same amount of money. So why give the owners those 24 extra games? But I think more games is good. We don't know if fans can come back.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know. Like you said, the Nationals were 19-31. I think a sprint of 50 mm-hmm. games. I just think 72 games is better. If you're a player, do you see it that way? Do you say, let's take the 72? Or would you just say, if they're not going to come up to 100%, we're not doing it?
I want to play. I mean, I'm just one of those, like,
I think you're going to play.
Never...
It's a matter if you play 48 or 72.
Yeah, I mean, I would go as far as I can negotiating, trying to get as many games in at as much money as you possibly can. But, you know, I just believe that there's some kind of maybe the number is somewhere in this. Because, okay, the owners came up from 48 games to 72. Well, then that means as a player, you ask for 80, knowing that you're going to probably end up somewhere in the 60s. Okay. I'd rather what if you could get them to 64 games at 90%? Well, that might be worth it. Cause that's an extra, you know, that's quite a few more games to play and you're getting quite, you know, 90% of your salary. I think that would be something you could live with and you get more games in there. Now, the players, the one thing that the players I've spoken to have said, is they don't believe it has anything to do with how much money the owners would lose this year or next year. They think this is all about the collective bargaining agreement in 2021 and that whoever wins this standoff between players and owners over this year will have the leverage going into the 2021 CBA negotiations. And that is that's where it all is. That's where everything matters because that's
right. A lot of
how baseball
that,
functions.
That's what this yeah. is really all about. Hey, let's squeeze a call yeah. in here. Patrick right. in L.A. on line two. Hey, Patrick, you're on 710 ESPN. How you doing? Patrick. Oh, he dropped. Okay, so we'll take a break. We'll come back and take more of your phone calls. 877-710-ESPN. 877-710-3776. Lines open now if you want to get through. Also, Matt Barnes coming up next hour and Fast Track coming up next hour. Ramona Informace, I'm John Ireland, 710 ESPN.